And oh, let me get the time again. All right. It's 4:02, and today is August 14th, and I'd like to bring the Environmental Services Advisory Committee to order. Roll call, Fred Ariza.
Here.
Margo Garcia.
Here.
Hallie Hughes.
Here.
Doug Jennings is absent. Trevor Ledbetter.
Here.
Susanna Shippers. Not quite yet. And Ryan Thomas. Not here yet, right? Okay. Well, we can get started. We've got a quorum. Oh, just quickly, because I follow too many things on the news for item two, chairperson's report. And you know the UN's having the Geneva conferences on plastic. They were trying to get a global treaty for lowering plastic production. And of course, the nations remain deadlocked over whether to tackle the exponential growth of plastic production. A draft of the treaty release wouldn't limit plastic production or address chemicals used in plastic products. Instead, it's centered on proposals where there's broad agreement about problematic plastic products, redesign, and better waste management. So, I guess we're right on track, Carlos. We can agree on that at least. So, okay. Let's move on to item three, director's report.
Thank you. So I know Frank provided you an overview regarding a little bit about Los Reales landfill collection system last time. So I thought I would just expand a little bit on that, and hopefully what you heard is similar to what I'm about to really to provide you an update on. So there's several things that are going on at the landfill. So as it relates to the gas collection and methane system. So back in April of 2024, the EPA and the Pima County Department of Environmental Quality inspected Los Reales. When they did the inspection, they basically found that we were not in compliance with the new permit regulation that kicked in back in 2021. And so the way we had gone about it on that was the before, and I'm just going a few years back, we used to do a lot of the inspections ourselves, a lot of the landfill monitoring ourselves. We had environmental scientists, we had a lot of staff in-house that essentially that kept us pretty much in line with those requirements. Since then, we hired a consulting firm that was helping us or assisting us on not only collecting the data, but also submitting the reports. And they were doing that. We were doing that. We were submitting all the reports to Pima County DEQ, thinking that we were in compliance since 2021. Never really came to light that essentially that we were out of compliance until the date of the inspection. And primarily the date of the inspection, there were three things that essentially that we got noted that we were out of compliance. One, since the inaction or the adoption of those rules in 21, the city really should develop a sampling report or a program that would include the testing of the new regulations. So and most of that was essentially centered on the what they call the penetration point. So each well extends above a ground, and so around the annulus of that well, there's a lot of leakage from landfills. So we were supposed to test for that, we were supposed to monitor that, and we were not doing that. So that was one of the one what we didn't have a plan. Two, we were not testing for those around those penetrations, and third, the equipment that we were using really to do that testing hadn't been calibrated properly, or we didn't have the data really to show that equipment was calibrated. It's not our equipment. It was really just a vendor that was essentially calibrating that. So moving forward, Frank and his staff at the landfill immediately really put a plan together, put a response together. So in our minds, that notice of violation that was noted in April was essentially corrected May and June timeframe. So there's two things. One is the NOV, the notice of violation, and everything that we need to do on that. But also there are quarterly reports and semi-annual reports that we submit to Pima County DEQ that we were submitted them, and none of them basically told us you're out of compliance, you need this information. So those two things are running concurrently. Moving forward, we heard back from Pima County DEQ that so immediately we sent a response. Hey, this is what we acknowledge that we failed to do X, Y, and Z. We put this plan together. We put this action together. We feel that are no longer in compliance. Never heard back. Never heard from DEQ until I would say late October, when they said, you know what, we got your information, but we still feel we are going to move forward with issuing the notice of violation. So they believe they issued that tentative notice of violation in November, and then they gave us an opportunity for us to meet with them and said, well, instead of you fining us, and I think the fine that they were looking at assessing to us was around $272,000, we said, can we make improvements to the system that would essentially help us alleviate or offset the environmental impacts that we created as a result of us not monitoring that for that information? And they said, well, let's take a look at it. We'll get back to you. So I believe the early part of December, January timeframe, they got back to us and said, yeah, we like your plan, but we need to review some other information. So we didn't ask for additional information. We provided that information. And then about a couple months ago, they said, we are approving your plan. We like your plan, but we still are going to enter into what is called a consent order of abatement by consent. So we negotiated that out. We went back and forth, not significantly. It's just a matter of really ensuring that the timelines that they had asked us really to comply with were actually we can work with that. It's not so much that we were just asking for a lot of more time. We were just looking to make sure that those times were adequate. But because by the time you get a consultant, you do this, you do that, we needed the time. So we're to the point right now that are waiting really just for the final order of abatement really to be finalized. They gave us a tentative approval really to do those mitigation measures. What are those mitigation measures? So what we told them was that we were going to do a physical assessment of all the collection system, and really test every single well, test every single connection, test every annulus, and also in order for us to improve essentially the collection of gas, we were going to install four additional wells, so additional extraction wells. So we're in the process of doing all this stuff, so that's ongoing. Again, we're waiting really just for the final order of abatement by consent to be finalized, and essentially we have about 6 months really to do all that work. It's part of that work too as well. When we do the assessment and we do those initial four wells, most likely is going to identify us to do additional improvements to the system. So either additional wells, maybe improvements to the headers, how we collect the gas. So we don't know that that's underway. So that's essentially immediate actions, a report of the findings, and then a report, also a separate report to say, here's the improvements that you need to make to make sure that the system is up and running. So that is one side of the equation in terms of the violations, working with Pima County DEQ, identifying a mitigation plan, putting in place a physical improvement plan, making those improvements, doing the monitoring in conjunction with Pima DEQ, identifying really a long-term investment on the system so that we could at least, so we can get to, so we can be at a good level in terms of really that system. Separately, but in conjunction with that, as you all know, we've been trying to work with a landfill gas developer, not only in terms of selecting one, but also really executing a landfill gas to purchase agreement for the long use of the long-term use of the landfill gas. We were in the process, they had presented to us a gas to purchase agreement. We had reviewed that agreement. There were some clauses in there that if we executed that agreement, would tie our hands significantly. And if we didn't produce the gas that they requested, the required, then the city was going to be responsible to offset the cost of that investment if there was not enough gas being produced. So what we suggested is, instead of really doing that, can we really do, again, a physical assessment of the system? They're going to do a drone. They're going to fly it with a drone. They're going to make a determination where is the mostly of the gas production. So very technically driven, coming up again with an improvement plan that shows how much gas can we produce? What can we really essentially think that the system can yield, and really come to terms in terms of saying, what is the maximum amount of gas that we can pull from that system, from the landfill gas, from landfill? How do we design adequately a system that pairs up with the production of gas, and really look at the financial feasibility of what the investment is going to look like? Still, the issue remains is, again, what we're trying to find out is how much, what is the production, what is the quality of the material too as well. But then third is really who may be where would be the ultimate end user for that landfill gas. And so one of the challenges still, and is going to continue to be, is Kinder Morgan, as you all know, advises that they don't want to take our landfill gas. Next one is Southwest Gas. The Southwest Gas is telling the developer, I may accept the gas, but it's contingent upon ACC approval. So we're going through all those motions as we speak. Okay, so we executed that sub-agreement with this developer, saying let's do the physical assessment, let's make a determination in terms of what we can do, what the system can do. We have a good list in terms of very similar to what we're doing with PDEQ. As a matter of fact, we're using the same consultant, we're using the same engineers, really to come up with the assessment. So even though we look at there's two separate tracks, because one is with PDEQ, one of them is really the landfill gas. We're using the same engineering firm really to come up with the plan, the improvement plan. And that way would give us essentially a good indication of the volume, the quality, the level of improvements, and really make a determination of the economic feasibility to design and to build a system that could essentially be sustainable for the next 20 years. So those are the two things that are essentially done concurrently. One related to PDEQ and the NOV and the closure of that. The other one is really, how do we execute a long-term agreement for landfill gas production and utilization, understanding that we don't want to overcommit to deliver gas that we cannot be able to produce, and be responsible to pay the developer the cost of an overbuilt facility. So we didn't want to put ourselves into that predicament. Separately, okay, we have four recently installed four wells on the northern part of the landfill, because by the time you put waste into a cell, we got up to 5 years to start installing a new well system to collect the landfill gas that is generated for that within that cell. That is a compliance issue, and so we install those wells. Unfortunately, those four wells exceed the landfill gas temperature that is allowed under a permit. So the threshold on that is, I believe, is 130 degrees, and we're seeing about 140 degrees of gas temperature in those wells. So that also trigger another possible NOV, which we notify PDEQ, and we're working with them really to come up with a mitigation plan on how we're going to essentially work that out. So those are all the things that essentially are going around at the landfill gas. So there's a lot of work that is underway. There's going to be some physical work that will take place initially in the next 6 months. It's really just the four wells. There's going to be a physical assessment of the system, not only for PDEQ, but also for the landfill gas purchase agreement. There's going to be a drone fly that's going to identify how much gas we can also produce. So at the end of the day, we should have, and it's not another study. It's really just a physical assessment of the system to be able to put good numbers in terms of production and quality, so we can build a system and or maybe do something else if it's not feasible for us to do anything with the landfill gas. Because as you know, even though we clean it, we can inject it into the pipeline, still Kinder Morgan or Southwest Gas and say, I'll take it. And we have to deliver that gas to the open market, the commodity market. It seems to be stable right now. And we're hoping that that's still going to remain for quite a bit of time. So from that perspective, it's not an issue, because that was one of the things that under the new administration, they were thinking that maybe those credits may go away. And so they basically said, no, they're staying, they're remaining. The only thing that they did, the administration has really took out the use of all the credits of using landfill gas to produce power, because they and battery and charge batteries, because I think those actually that system or that scenario falls outside of what we're trying to do with the landfill gas. And so I think it was a good move, and it really just goes back to just focusing on landfill gas for production. So the audit or the physical assessment, we got 6 months really to complete both tasks. And so it's probably going to be around December, January timeframe. We're hoping that before the end of the year, we would have a good closure on the NOV. We would have a good understanding in terms of what the landfill gas can and cannot do. And that way, we could be in a position really to present something to the founding fathers, really to make a decision as we move forward with that system. So multiple things, multiple, a lot of moving parts. So I just thought I would give you an overview. It's a very complicated scenario with but I think we do have a plan moving forward, but we're hoping to get that finalized again before the end of the year.
Wow. Shoo. Any questions?
I was wondering why the gas is so hot. What is explained? Is just so much so much compost, so much degradation is going on at a very fast rate.
That's pretty much it. That's what we believe. That's what we think, and that's what we're hoping. A lot of times could be is the type of waste. There's waste that could be very like chemical pools, pool chemicals, batteries that could be in the mix that are accelerating essentially that composition. So those are the things we're hoping that over time, as we begin to monitor, that we can see a decline in the temperature. But we just, that's what we're thinking. It's really just a lot of green material. The time of the year is also, and it's a top of a landfill. So there's a lot of those factors that we think that it's really because it's a very active cell that is basically trying to decompose as fast as it can. But the risk is that we may have other stuff in there that may be accelerating the decomposition of that.
Is there a way to cool it down?
So there are some ways that essentially you limit the extraction of the gas, so that way you're not pulling as much air out of it. You try to put more of a cap on the top of it, just to reduce the amount of stuff that can, because when you pull it and if you got cracks, if you're sucking into it and you got cracks, then you're bringing in a lot more oxygen into it. So making a reduction of that, essentially stopping the flow of the gas. So those are the primary things that are done. Obviously monitoring that, you establish a baseline temperature, you make some adjustments and you're hoping that that trend would go down. So there's a lot of things that we need to try out to make sure that we keep it under that. The other thing that essentially most of the new permits that are being issued are essentially give the threshold of 140 degrees. Our permit is basically 130. So, and that's something that we are trying to say, hey, can we make an adjustment to the permit? But I don't think we have a lot of, I would say, leverage really to be asking for permit amendments at this point in time.
So, it can it burst into flames? Can there be an underground fire from this?
We don't believe so. That's always a possibility, but we at this point we don't see that. If the trend is stable and is going down a little bit, if you were to be picking up, then that would be the case. But we don't think we're in that situation at this point in time. I'm not saying it cannot happen, but I'm just saying
Sure.
we just haven't seen that right now.
That's not a major fear. It certainly is always a possibility, but not a big one.
Yes.
Okay.
So there's a lot of noise, and there's a lot of notion of folks saying that we're out of compliance. I can tell we're not. We did everything we could. We did everything we could or needed to do really to bring the system into compliance. There is a lot of noise out there that there is a big plume of methane around the landfill. We know that there is, and it's out there because we all know landfills emit essentially methane and other pollutants. What's interestingly enough, though, when they did the flyover, and you can Google this stuff. It's not essentially done by a government agency. It's most of those are either nonprofit folks that are that. So you have the folks that are very interested in launching satellites, rockets, and how can they build a business model and demonstrate that their technology is good and you should really pursue that. And so that stuff is out there, so you can Google that. And one of the most common one that people refer to is the believe is a carbon tracker or methane tracker. What's interesting enough is, yeah, you can see a plume or essentially a cloud over the landfill, but yet you don't see anything at the TEP power plant. And so it's like within a few within a mile or so, a couple miles, you don't see anything there. And we know for sure that those emissions are much greater than what we generate on our end. So again, it's don't want to ignore that obviously, but we got to be mindful that how the data is generated, who's generating the data. And there is really no government entity that essentially is monitoring and really ensuring that what parameters should we essentially be under, and are we there? Are we exceeding that? And really, what are the parameters associated with the permit? So everything is governed by our permit conditions on the ground, and not really what those satellites are telling folks of the stuff in and around the landfill.
Any other questions? Frank did show us some pictures of the equipment at the landfill. I thought that was really interesting. So I can't remember. That wasn't in a PowerPoint, was it, Margo? Or he just had those.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, he just showed them on the screen.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think people would be interested to see what they look like if you haven't been out there to check them out. Oh,
What?
also, oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say one other, I'm just thinking about Frank's presentation. He talked a little bit about the vacuum system, whether that needed to be improved or upgraded. You mentioned the annular the rings, the interface between the top of the landfill and where the well comes out, I guess, is where the escape is happening. And we talked a little bit about, how strongly that vacuum is pulling out the gas, therefore pulling in air from wherever it can sneak in. Is there some discussion again about what's happening to that vacuum system or?
That's part of the physical assessment, is really just looking at the well. Is the well straight? Is it pinched? How is it connected? And how is that really that well connected to the main header? and really in that main header is, do we have any leakages? Do we have enough vacuum, enough suction really in those header lines to make sure that we're pulling all the gas we need to pull out of those wells? Or do we need, or we need to install additional headers to be able to make sure that we have the ability to provide the suction of the pressure of the vacuum to pull that gas. So it's a function of not only in terms of the well itself, but it's also as a function of the header or the lateral, and the lateral could be pinched, could be essentially underwater too, and that really creates a surge that doesn't really allow the gas to come through. So those are all the things that need to be evaluated. They got to be evaluated per segments, and to look and make sure that you can segment the pipeline and identify where those pinch points may be.
Mayor and council are aware of all this going on, aren't they?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh,
Yes.
okay. Okay. Because yeah, I think it was Ward 3 was worried about the health of the people that live around the landfill. So, and that didn't seem to fit in with what we've heard is going on. So, and I had suggested that Tony Davis do an update. So I know you've t worked with him before. I remember what he did when we were going through all the plastic problems.
Yeah, certainly. And that's, we more than happy to sit down with him, more than happy to really to our approach in terms of working with PEMA DEQ is we want to have it side by side in terms of the work that we're doing, and just want to make sure that we're transparent and as open as we can be and we're going to be, just to make sure that we give folks the sense of confidence that yeah, it was a bad mark, but we put all the eggs in one basket. We learn from that. We're moving on. We're trying to ramp up to be where we were a few years ago, and just trying to move on and rebuild our credibility that we always had, and just trying to get us out of this rut.
Hey, okay. Thank you. If there's no
Thank you.
one else, thanks, Carlos.
Thank you.
Let's move on to item four and the financial monthly report. Is
Maggie's not here, but I'll go ahead and introduce myself.
okay.
My
Okay.
name is Isaac Marcor. I'm serving as the interim finance manager for ESD. And I did speak with Maggie earlier today, and she sends her regards to everyone here, of course, and says that she misses these meetings. I'll give you quick background. I think I've seen some of you, at least one of you, in another committee meeting. But I've worked with housing in the city, and I'm also serving as the finance manager for Mass Transit. So that's where I come from, and kind of the experience that I bring to the table. But let me go ahead and share my screen, and I'll get some of this stuff out of the way. Can you all see okay? Is there something in the way? Or is it just
There
that?
it is.
Okay.
This is 502.
So it's nice to meet all of you, and I'm happy to be here. Really quickly, I'll go over the material that I think was shared, and recap that the FY25 actuals are not closed yet, but we're at 99%. We have the city barring any audit adjustments through the end of next week to get in any last transactions. And then again, anything after that will just be audit adjustments. So these numbers aren't final. They could change. I have to give that disclosure, of course, but they're very close to what we expect to be audited financials. I realized after creating this, and I went off of what I saw in way of what was created last year around the same time, but I think it would have been helpful to have FY25 budget on here. So what I'll do is just focus on some of these numbers and give you what we came in at compared to budgeted. So for our revenues, budgeted was at $71.9 million budgeted revenue, but you'll see here that we came in well above that at $77.2 million. And you'll see also year over year the increase that happened due to residential revenue and those rate changes, which was expected. Another item that I'd like to point out is the transfer that came in of $1 million for the Bifusion project. That also is affecting the revenues. So that one isn't expected to be recurring, but some of these, or most of these others are, and we see those reflected with the new rates being set. The other side of that, of course, is the expenses. Let me zoom in so that can get out of the way there. The expenses for fiscal year 25, we came in at 65.8 million dollars, and we had budgeted 71.8 million dollars. So we were well below budget, and between the looking at our expenditures and revenues, we came in 11.3 in the black and the green. So very favorable to the fund. And to the department, again, while noting that some of that was one-time dollars for Bifusion, and in talking about expenditures, I'd like to note that the largest piece of the amount that came under budget in way of expenditures was capital projects. We see that happening throughout the city, where we budget and program dollars for those capital projects. But as is true of capital projects, there are delays and we don't see the expenditures exactly where we hope to see them. So that accounts for $5.6 million of the difference between what was budgeted and expenses and the actuals we see. So I'll pause there, see if there are any questions about those numbers. Let me zoom out again.
The one that always interests me is where the administration claws back their administration fee. Where do I see that? Where should I see that?
I think that's better reflected in this other sheet, and that's the if I'm not mistaken, or rather, is it the $12 million that you're
Yes, they
thinking of?
usually take money for, the city council and the manager's office and human resources and all those services they provide.
The central cost allocation. Yeah.
Yes, that's what I'm looking, that's the
Yeah.
word I'm looking for.
Sure. So that's generally speaking reflected here in the administration line, like you mentioned in this
Okay.
report. And it's, if I'm not mistaken, close to $12 million, but I can get you a good number on that if.
Okay, I'm just wondering, because that often is not a fixed number at the begin. I mean, they put a number in, but it can change according to what the expenditures actually, I guess, are more likely.
I can look into that, Margot.
Okay.
My understanding is that it's at or around $12 million, and that if there
That
are
sounds
changes,
right.
they're not
Yeah.
material. But I'm happy to get back to the group with
Okay.
what the end number was for fiscal year 25 on that shared central cost allocation dollar as it affected Fund 502.
So, Ms. Margo, one of the big differences, at least in this past year or so, it includes the fleet charges. And that's really built into the central cost allocation. That's why the number is so big, because it includes that. So it includes fleet charges, and includes also mayor, manager, city attorneys, all the stuff that you mentioned. So that's why the numbers is much greater than you typically see.
And where does the gasoline, is that with the fleet charges too, or is that separate?
I think that
No,
is
the
separate.
fuel, I shouldn't say
Fuel, yeah,
gasoline.
fuel.
Nobody
Right.
uses gas anymore. The
Right.
fleet, whatever's
I
running
believe,
the machines.
yeah, I believe that is done separately.
Okay.
But we can double check on that.
Sorry, I'm trying to.
So that's the diesel and the CNG, and
Right. Yeah,
that's
very little diesel, very little unleaded, and most of that CNG. So
okay.
it's, yeah.
Okay.
And those costs would reflect over here in the commodities line, two different views, of course. But if you also like the breakdown of those fuel costs for fiscal year 25, and then also I can get the breakdown. I'll work with Carlos, of course, to get whatever information
Well,
we can share.
yeah, the concern in the past is where there's been big oscillations in the cost, and I think CNG stayed pretty stable, so it hasn't been the big, 20 years ago when I first started in this stuff, those costs could really swing the budget one way or the other, to not to the detriment of the department, you oftentimes. And so one time we put a surcharge in to try to help handle that, because it was just impossible to guess, what those fuel charges would be. But I isn't CNG much more stable in terms of its cost?
Yeah, so I'll mention two things. Yes, CNG is more stable in terms of its cost, or at least we've seen it be more stable over the last years. And then the other part as well is that because of what happened and planning for that possibility in the future, there is a contingency for fuel in the
Okay.
general fund that is built
Right.
into the general fund budget. Again, we don't budget or want to see that number because that is the break glass in case of emergency.
Sure. Okay. Well, that's good to know. I didn't realize that the general fund had developed a little place, because what we did before was put in a temporary surcharge, and then as the prices came down, we took it off, and we did do away with it completely. I always like to say, you see, surcharges don't have to stay forever when they're tied to a particular issue, which was a settle, but it's certainly a lot cleaner if the general fund has a little pocket to handle some of those things.
Sure.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I had switched over to this other sheet that reflects those actuals and revised for FY26. There's not much in way of information for 26, as we only have one period of information. But of course, this year we're keeping a real finger on the pulse to make sure that we're tracking expenses and revenues, of course, as well as we can, and get on the right side of any difficult decisions that we might have. But I don't know if there are any additional questions, and I don't know if this or some more detailed overview is what Maggie was giving. But if you have any questions, I'm happy to look into them as well.
Would you say in general we're on track? I mean, it's 1 month is pretty hard to say.
Yeah, 1 month is very difficult to say. What I can get back with is 1/12 of the costs for the budget. But again, with the biggest mover of the needle, whether or not we'll be on track are some of those capital projects and how much we see in way of expenses for those items. But for everything else, for those recurring regular O&M costs, I'm happy to get the 1/12 and see how we're doing in way of on track.
Yeah, and I know it also depends on how fast people get their bills in to be paid, and all that sort of stuff that happens. We do. I was going to bring up from our report about the electric truck is still not operating, and there's some talk about trying to go back and use the Lemon Law that would have come in last year's costs of the three quarters, 725,000 for that truck. So that doesn't, nothing here shows up with that problem. Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Isaac. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, and I like that it's bigger when I print it out.
Good. Good. I'm glad that worked out.
That just
it was helps nice. Thank you.
Older folks out. So thanks.
You're welcome.
All right. Let's move on to item five. And Margo, you were gonna give a quick update on what we had in the Waste Aversions Collections and Education Subcommittee.
Trevor, we missed you. Yeah. You tapped me. So I'll do my best. Okay, let's see. We had quite a good meeting. I'm going to skip all the stuff about the landfill gas since we got a much more complete update today. So there was a customer survey sent out, you may remember a while back. There's a draft report that's going around for review. They got over 3,000 responses. And in general, people are very happy with ES services. The biggest complaint, of course, was not taking the calls on a timely matter. People liked the old brush and bulky, and they wanted to know more about the new program. They also would like to see glass and green waste be a curbside service. Most of those replying were over 65. Of course, they're the ones that are sitting around and have the time, and split about equally between men and women. Wards 2, 4, and 6 had the highest response rates of over 20%. Wards 1, 3, and 5 had about 9%. And 6% didn't know what ward they lived in, even though there was a map there. The final report will be out in 2 to 3 weeks. The customer service reps are going to do ride-alongs with the trash and recycling trucks to help them understand what's involved in the collection system, so maybe we can get some more reasonable responses from them when they get people call in with questions. ES is applying for an ADEQ grant, which is due, which has to be submitted by the 9th of September. And the money is coming from the disposal fees that the various disposal companies pay into the state. The grant is to start a pilot to test using a third bin for food and green waste. The pilot will be about 1,500 households who would request to be part of this pilot, and they would get that third bin picked up on the off week from the recycling. There'll be an application process, and the data collection that they'll be making will be the set out rate, how many people are actually participating, the tonnage collection, and of course, the issues of contamination. It's necessary to get something going if ES is going to make the 50% diversion rate by the year 2030. So it'll be interesting to see how that works, and we don't know yet how the application is going to work, but stay tuned if you want to be part of this pilot. I mentioned they still can't use the electric truck. It only has 1,000 miles on it, and procurement is getting involved by invoking the lemon law. In other words, it just isn't working, and therefore the company needs to do something about it. We're taking a new approach to recruiting drivers. ES is down 17 drivers, which is one whole task force. The new recruits will need their CDL, their commercial driver's license, but it will be only advantageous to have years of experience that were previously required. So the hope is by relaxing that a bit, they'll get more people to come in. And also a new vendor is doing the background checks so that they will only take 10 days instead of the previous weeks they've been taking, which has slowed down the recruitment or the hiring process. The MRF report, overall, there was a slight drop in tonnage, but of course it's summertime and a lot of people are leave town. So the June one was down from 1,774 to 1,712. It's I think a 9% drop, so it's not too bad. There was a 9% drop in the amount of money collection. The contamination still sits at 19.6%, which was not the last audit, but the audit before, because the last audit the MRF couldn't do it because of a breakdown in their system. But the next audit will be coming up in September, and we'll all hope that it stays at that nice low rate, which really brings down the cost associated with that. Plastics have dropped in value. Nobody could tell us why. In May, they were 2 and 5 were at $802, and this in June they were $562. And we know that there's a new plant going on in Las Vegas, and they may be still working out how what that plastic material coming in is worth to them, and how they figure that into their economics. Public outreach. The EE Exchange, which is a group we've been cons having a consulting group we've been having for, gosh, probably 15 years, I think, have been very successful. They've done a bunch of Recycling 101 presentations, including two for all new TUSD teachers during their orientation. They've been very popular, and they've gotten excellent reviews, including by neighborhood associations. So if you're part of a neighborhood association, ask to have one of the presentations come there. And we got some rave reviews about people who had heard them. A master recycling class will start in September. You all got a flyer for that. And a zero waste event is scheduled for November 15th. Interestingly, there's going to be a national competition to collect 2 million cans. I assume they mean aluminum cans, but that was not made clear. The target is third graders in schools, and there'll be a national prize, and the students get to keep the value of the cans they collected. So if you know any teachers, third grade teachers, tell them to get on board. ES participated in 3 back to school events. Collections. The Area 25 Rush and Bulky by appointment has seen a drop in illegal dumping, and that is really good news, because that's been one of the hopes that this would help with that. 48% of the residents have scheduled pickups, and in the Area 19, which is the other one, 44 have scheduled pickups. One of the interesting things they're seeing is that when someone is scheduled to pick up and put out their stuff, suddenly the neighbors say, "Oh, it must be B&B time," and so they put out their stuff as well, but they haven't scheduled it. So what the crews are doing are they develop some door hangers, and they put them on the doors and say, "You know, you need to call in and schedule your own pickup for these things." And so far, they haven't had any complaints about taking this approach. Homeless encampments. From January through July, they cleaned up 1,464 camps. 242 required a police escort. Most of you probably know that Ward 6 has moved its collection site to a parking lot, part of High Corbett Field. So far, they've had one complaint. One of the things they have done is that they have dropped the cardboard and miscellaneous pickup, because that was just an ongoing issue of people leaving stuff on the outside, and businesses and people who shouldn't be bringing their stuff there were. So anyway, all that's there now is the glass and the oh, and they've added the food bin. Now you can also take your food, composting food there, and the glass, and of course the orange bags. And Frank reported, Benias, head of the landfills, reported that the biofusion construction is slowly picking up again. They've put in the base, they've put in the curbing. It's a prefabricated, pre-manufactured building, and so it will be assembled here. So I guess some of those pieces are slowly arriving. It's still scheduled for fall completion, and I won't add anything to Carlos's extensive discussion about the wells. One thing I always think is how much things cost, because I have so many misconceptions. I'll never forget the first time I learned that it cost $100,000 to put in a signal. Of course, that was almost 50 years ago. I'm sure, to signal a four-way street intersection, I'm sure today it's $1 million or more. But it's $180,000 to put in the methane extraction wells. The four of them is what the expense is, 180,000. And there are 71 gas extraction wells at the landfill now, and there are, of course, more at all of the closed landfills. So that's the summary of I had for our meeting. Any additions from other people who were there? Corrections.
Sounds good.
Yep, it's a busy place.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. We're getting through this meeting pretty quickly. Let's head to item six for future agenda items. Is anything that's
Yes, continuation of the gas. I mean, it's until it's settled. I guess I am a bit distressed that this gas to energy is seems to be much more fluid than I had previously been led to thought of, that we don't know. Kinder Morgan has said no, gas, Southwest Gas has said maybe. Other people, I guess, are thinking about it. So,
Has there been any updates on bifusion at all, Carlos, that we would benefit from, or is it still kind of?
I think we could provide an update on the overall plastics program for the next meeting. Yes. And
Okay.
to include bifusion, not the building itself, but just the business itself.
Business. Okay.
Yeah, we'll just do an overall update of the city's hard to recycle plastics program.
It's just having been away for 6 weeks and not having that, I just could not get over how much I would kept tossing into the general trash with all those plastic bags that's around frozen food, plastic bag that's, the film that covers everything. It's astonishing how much there is.
And a problem all over the world, for sure.
We're lucky to be doing something. I hope it works out.
Anything else? All right. Well, okay. Let's move on. No call to audience, item seven. And I guess this will be a real quick meeting. I think this is a record, actually, for a long time. And a call for adjournment at 4:56. So, everyone, do your rain dances. This
We
isn't
got rain last
working.
night.
It's not working. Okay. See you later.
All right.
Bye.
Good to see you
Bye.
guys. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.